Hi, this is the Dark Tangent. The speech you're about to listen to was originally recorded at DEF CON 5 at the Aladdin Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1997. Now all rights are reserved except permission for educational non-profit use. If you have any questions about DEF CON or the copyright status, contact me at dtangent@defcon.org or the website at www.defcon.org. Now kick back and relax.
How's everybody today? I hope you made it up okay. It was a wonderful surprise to wake up this morning and realize that I was speaking as well. Glad I made it here, so thank you very much. No need to clap. No. I was being cynical. Now, the topic of discussion that I picked has mostly to do with distributed object systems, and mostly concentrating on the Korba system. For most of you, it's probably a pretty new topic. It's a pretty new topic overall, and I'm going to go over it in a very general way, and at the end, I'm going to hit up on some of the security issues in a pretty general way. If anybody wants to, at the end, come up to me and talk about some of the specific exploits, we could talk about it. There's not a whole lot out there to go out and exploit at this point. Unfortunately, with the systems that are in place, too, what's implemented, only large companies in general have things that are implemented that run Korba. So with that being the case, the only real places you're going to end up finding Korba systems are going to be with large companies. And because of a lot of the people out here, unfortunately, most of these large companies are now behind firewalls. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to gain access to some extent to these systems. So that's the way life is at this point. But let me first start out and let's talk about what an object is and why object technology is something that is important besides it just being a silly marketing buzzword. And I'm going to talk about objects in the way that they probably should have been discussed from the get-go, from a programmer's point of view, instead of from a marketing point of view. I think at this point, unfortunately, objects have been turned into just a buzzword that you plug in whenever any company makes a product or a language or anything. It's object-oriented, and it has no meaning anymore. So let me first off start by defining what an object is. An object is really just a means of data abstraction. An object goes ahead and it acts upon data in a way or form. Objects have three things that they do. They do they encapsulate their methods through They do encapsulation, inheritance, and polymorphism. Let me describe what encapsulation is a little bit. When you go ahead and you write code, you'll have two portions. You'll have an interface, which is the means of communicating with an object, and then you have the actual implementation, which is the abstracted code, the thing that you have written that actually does the work on the computer that will give you back the data that you might have requested. Let's give an example real quick because that was a little bit abstract in itself. Let's say you wanted to add two numbers. You might write an adding object. The way that you would make the adding object work is you would maybe send it two numbers, 5 and 5, and because it's the adding object, you would send 5 and 5 to the add interface. The implementation then underneath it, which you wouldn't know what it was, would then go ahead and do the work on the two numbers, and then another interface would go and spit back to you 10. So, if the implementation was written right. So, now there's a lot of reasons why objects are good and bad, and we'll get into that further on, the whole bad side, but one of the good reasons for objects is that, it allows individuals to write code a lot faster because people can go ahead and they can share code in a much more rapid way. Because individuals just have to follow interfaces, instead of writing actual implementation, they just go ahead and they send data over. All they need to do is just share data. And I'll, sorry about this, it's so confusing in the beginning, but I'll go ahead and I'll move on and it'll make a little bit more sense. And let me just go ahead and I'll get into, let's look at development from the beginning and where things have moved on to now, up all the way through distributed objects. So the first way that individuals had to write code was through machine language, or if you want to kick it up a little bit higher, through assembler, which is the most basic way with communicating to the system. The next level that you would write a program would be with a higher level procedural language. A good example of a bad procedural language would be BASIC, which I imagine just about everybody has seen at some point. Has written that go-to program, 10, print your name, go-to 10. The next level, of course, with languages would be dynamic linking, where when you write a program, you would have calls to other things external to the actual program to go ahead and make that program work. After that, you would have an object language, and what an object language does is it has built into it an object-oriented framework or an object-oriented method that would allow you to go ahead and invoke objects for that language only. After that, you would have an actual object framework, which would be a much more general type object, which would allow you to write using other languages for a specific platform objects that would work for that one platform. And then the final top level is distributed objects, where you could go ahead and write an object that just about any platform can use across a network from anywhere, from the local system. Its method invocation is completely general. So just about any system can go ahead and use it. Now, programming, of course, is the building block to making a computer work. Since now we have moved more to the end of using things on networks, and since being on a network is a lot more fun than not being on a network, if you have objects, you might as well use your network wisely and distribute them across the network so that you're able to use these distributed things all about to get data working, to do things. Now, to use your network wisely, there's a few systems that are out there to go ahead and program and get data in and get data out, get things back, get things forth. The primary way that individuals would program to do network invocations would be socket programming. And if you do socket programming, it's essentially just a library, and with the library you go and you make certain calls to it. And with doing that, you can go ahead and get on the network and get data out, get data back. It's not an object form at all, it's just a way of getting to the outside world. Another method of getting out to the outside world, which is probably the most popular one right now, is HTTP CGI. Another method of going out and sending out data or getting data back, if you're looking for it, is Java has something within it called remote method invocation, which is just a means of being able to find interfaces so that you can go and make network requests and go and get network data back. And in the distributed object forum, there are two currently. One that has been written by Microsoft called DCOM, and probably most of you have heard of their object framework. It used to be called OLE, or Object Linking Embedding, but They have renamed it to ActiveX. Yeah, exactly. Boo. Everybody boo. Thank you. The power of the mic, I love it. So there's DCOM, which actually if you go and you look at the, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but Microsoft has went and chucked a lot of RFCs in lately for all their products. So they're trying to do what they can to make things seem more standardized. But DCOM has an RFC. I'm sorry, I don't know the RFC number off the top of my head. But DCOM is the distributed component object model, and DCOM is Microsoft's system for handling distributed objects. The other method for handling distributed objects is CORBA, which is the Common Object Request Broker Architecture, and this is what we're this is why everybody's here and why we're sitting here. CORBA, as an object system, is the working group that works on it is called OMG, the Object Management Group, and OMG has backing from just about everybody else besides Microsoft. So we'll have to see where things end up in the end, and I'll leave that to the end to discuss ActiveX and DCOM versus CORBA and why ActiveX and DCOM will probably end up winning. But let's get on and let's just discuss what a distributed object system does and what it allows. What a distributed object system does is it allows for data to be requested seamlessly between objects on a network. What a distributed object system should do is it should handle the storage and the it should handle the storage of the information of where objects are on the network, so that as a programmer you don't have to know where the objects are. All you need to do is make a request to the object broker for an interface that you'd like to use, and the distributed object system will handle the network request, and it will handle getting the data to the object that you request, and if data needs to be returned, it'll handle returning that data. We talked about DCOM a little bit earlier, and DCOM, of course, is Microsoft's invocation of a distributed object system. And if you want to look more into DCOM, I believe Microsoft already has a beta DCOM system out where you can go ahead and you can start making those requests. And as I said earlier, you can go and you can look at the RFC and you can start fooling around with the invocations that they have in place. And the framework for DCOM is called ActiveX. Now let me explain what a framework is once again in the respect of a distributed object system like DCOM. And I'll explain a little bit about the situation of ActiveX and why it makes it doesn't make sense in certain respects. Unfortunately, ActiveX has been a very well marketed item. I imagine most of you probably, if you use Windows, you probably have to download an ActiveX control at some point, or have to use an ActiveX control at some point. And even if you use Windows on any level, you've certainly had to use OLE, Object Linking Embedding, which is now ActiveX. Now, what ActiveX is, it's a hack, of course, because it has all of the old original Object Linking and Embedding code. But now what Microsoft is trying to do with ActiveX is they're attempting to design it so it has these interfaces to interface to DCOM, so that you can go ahead and you can make network requests to these objects and get data back. The unfortunate thing about the way that the ActiveX framework is designed is it's platform specific. So if you wanted to call a ActiveX DCOM object, unfortunately you can only call it if you're on a similar platform. So in the nature of distributed objects, that isn't what you want. You want to be able to execute, you want to be able to make requests across the network to any kind of system, and it doesn't matter what kind of network type you have in place. You want to be able to make a network request, and you want to be able to have it seamless, and you want to not have to worry about the issue of what kind of platform you're executing it on. So now let me get into what CORBA is. As I said earlier, CORBA is the Common Object Request Broker architecture, and what CORBA, the group that has worked on CORBA is called the Object Management Group. Since version 2.0 of CORBA, there has been communication between object request brokers. What that means is, if you make a request to an org of one platform type, then you can, from the one platform type, there's interoperability from one of another platform type. So for example, let's say I have my add CORBA object over on my Windows NT box running my CORBA object bus that does the add function, and that system is only running it's only running NetBIOS, for example. It's not running TCP/IP, it's just on the network. And I'm on my Sun workstation, and I need to run that add object. What can occur is, I go and I send out my add request, it goes across at some point, an ORB can do the network translation from TCP/IP to the NetBIOS, go and get the invocation and send to the stub of add, 5+5, goes and sends it. On the NT box, it executes it, it goes and sends it back. The ORB, of course, when it gets it back in a NetBIOS form. The ORB in the middle goes and translates it to TCP/IP. Then my ORB receives it, goes and sends it back to me, and then I have my added two numbers. So, the way that you're able to do this, the way that the object invocations get to be so general and they do not have to be platform specific, is through something that the object management group has done a lot of work on. It's called IDL, Interface Definition Language, or OMG IDL. What IDL essentially is it looks a lot like a C++ method invocation. So whenever you go essentially IDL looks like a method invocation, like on C++, and if you can go in, you can request method invocation, and an ORB will go ahead and kick it back, and you can go and you can look it over and see within it what object request that you can make. Now, this is where the interesting end of CORBA comes into play. CORBA, the way that CORBA keeps track of objects and where they are is through its interface repository. The interface repository, and it can be an enormous database of different object interfaces. The interface repository holds on to all that data, and only one ORB really needs to know all of that data. And if anybody needs to find out if a specific ORB has a certain invocation, then you can go and you can make a request to the ORB to get that data back. Well, here's the interesting part about the information repository on ORBs. Now, if you read the books that have been written, even if you read the books about ActiveX and Java and pretty much all of the major marketing literature that's out today about the hype systems, just about all of them are written to say that they are secure. What does that mean? Now with Java, of course, Java is defined to be a secure system, and the primary reason why is because it does bounds checking. What that means is it makes it extremely hard for individuals to be able to go and stuff a Java object with so much data that it coughs things up back to you, like a shell, a root shell. ActiveX, of course, says that it's secure, and the way that ActiveX publishes, the way that ActiveX says it's secure is by its certificate system. So if you want to get an ActiveX control that is secure, if you go and you download an ActiveX control and it is signed, then you get a little certificate thing on your screen, you click on OK and say, OK, that's great, it's secure. But inherently, there's no security system within that. The security system that Corba says it has in place as a secure system is it allows you to make secure transactions either across objects or secure transactions across orbs. So what that means is, and on two levels, you can do it on the level of encryption between objects. So an object can have an encrypted stream between another object when it goes and it communicates between interfaces. Or an orb can have an encrypted stream between objects and or between orb and orb. And you can also do it on the level of orb to object or if you see the tunneling method that's going on. So if you have wanted to, you could go ahead and have a four-way encryption stream going. But as far as inherent security, all that does is make the stream of communication secure. The other security that is not written or in place, but is said to make Corba secure, within transactions, you can go ahead and stamp them. So time, date, et cetera, stamping to make communications between objects secure. But inherently, Corba does not have that. Now, the thing that makes Corba an insecure system is the whole information repository, this IR system that I spoke of earlier. And the reason why is because the information repository, by definition, has to serve up to individuals, all of the object interfaces that it holds. Now, by serving up all the object interfaces, all an individual would need to do is write a browser-type program, which I think I know somebody who might have written one. All you need to do is write a browser-type program to go and ask the orb itself to serve up all of its interfaces. From the interface repository. Once you have all those, and one of the nice things about object interfaces in Corba is that each interface is supposed to be, and supposed to be, of course, is the key word, but a lot of programmers are good and they put comments in. It's supposed to be defined as far as what an interface does. So all a user needs to do is then go to a common object broker request architecture site and go ahead and ask it to serve up its interface repository. Once the interface repository is served up, you can go ahead and look at each individual interface invocation and read what they might do, and then you can go ahead and make decisions on what you might want to go and stuff into each interface. So with that in mind, let's talk about and backtrack a little bit to the different types of systems that are in place and some of the issues that might show up on hand with the different systems. Most hacking in place now, or most bugs that you might run into, are local system bugs. There are some remote bugs. Of course, we probably all have a couple remote send mail bugs that we know here and there, but for the most part, most bug problems that you run into are going to be buffer overflows, where you end up being able to execute code on the local machine because there is an issue with the local code where the bounds weren't checked on it, and you stuff in a value, and you stuff in so much data that you're able to execute things on that machine. And of course, the thing that you might want to execute on that machine is a root shell. Now, there are different levels, of course, where those issues occur, and let's start out at the first level of individual program. On that first level with the individual program, there are individual program exploits where you go and you would do some things to that individual program, and it would make your system insecure because it allows you to get to things that you inherently are not supposed to be able to get to. The next level, and you see on a lot of Unix systems, and I imagine a lot more will start popping up with NT, since a lot of people are concentrating on NT security now, and with all of the dynamic linking that NT has between all of its DLLs and all of its libraries, which I'm sure have tons of bugs in them, as a lot of Unix systems do. You see a lot of libc bugs, for example, and pretty much any Unix vendor is constantly passing its libc. The reason being is it's a library that people are linking to, and something within that library has a problem, which allows individuals to go and do things to it and kick data out. Okay, then let's go ahead to another level up, which of course would be a send mail bug or a problem with a program that you go and you can connect to and start doing things to. Usually those bugs, though, of course, are similar to the individual, the first bug types that I talked about, where it's the individual program that has a problem, or it's one of the statically or dynamically linked libraries to it that have problems. But the difference there is that you have access to that system from a remote point. Another on the top level of bug types, and the next level, of course, would be systems that go ahead and they kick data back to you in a friendly way, but unfortunately the way the program was written, it is giving you data that it shouldn't. A lot of you have probably seen that with the Perl bug, the PHF bug, where you can go to a system and you can ask it to kick back anything in a directory tree. So, you know, you might have it kick back a password file. And then on the top level, on the CORBA level, of course, you have the ability through IDL to execute code on pretty much any remote system anywhere that's on an object bus. And you can get defined what each interface does to go ahead and then which gives you all those levels of being able to exploit a system. So you have the initial level of a program, the actual object invocation being written poorly. So let's say it was written in C, which does not do bounds checking. You might make a request across an object bus to a certain object type that goes ahead and buffer overflows, and you can go ahead and you can get data back. Then there's the next level with the object that would make it insecure, where one of the statically linked or dynamically linked libraries would have a problem. So you make the request across the object bus. Something goes wrong with that object, and because something goes wrong, you go ahead and you get access to something that you normally should not have access to. The next level on top of that would be something on the level of the Perl script bug that you see with HTTP, where you're browsing through all the interface types on the object bus, and while browsing through those object types, you take note that there's one there that allows you to list files. So from that, you can go ahead and you can start stuffing values in and start to get things out, which actually there are a few of those objects on object buses pretty frequently, where you can go and you can just start listing files out on a system. The unfortunate thing with bugs like that is you do have to know the way the file system is set up, but in reality, most systems are set up pretty similar. Etsy password is pretty much always in the same place. So And then on the topmost level, of course, is the object bus, and where there you have the ability to go through, look at every single object type that's there, and go ahead and start devising plans and ideas of how you of what objects might be and what things you might want to do to each individual object to get the type of data out of it that you want. So, distributed objects, I think, are a good thing. It really allows individuals to have the independence from a specific architecture. It's a good thing because it makes it a lot easier for programmers to go ahead and put together software. Network software as well that hides all of the implementation issue of making requests across the network. And because it makes it so much easier, it allows individuals to write code a whole lot faster. The problem with it, of course, is when you start to run into all of these little issues of implementation and the problems of the code underneath. So that's where we stand currently with distributed object systems. If anybody is interested in some of the more technical implementations issues of CORBA and CORBA systems, then let me know. I'm here. If anybody has any questions, I'm open for them. As far as it goes, the object management group is, they do have a security working group, but as I said, as far as it goes with the security that they're putting in place, it's pretty similar to SSL. And that's a relatively secure thing. I would say the best thing to do, as far as it goes with security on this level of what I'm talking about, there's nothing. And it's actually pretty hard to find anything on Corbis security at all. You can go to omg.org to start looking over the RFPs that they have there on issues of security. But overall, there really is nothing at all, which is unfortunate because it defines itself as being secure. I would say right now, probably the best book to pick up if you want to start programming things, I forget the author's name, but it's called CORBA and Java. CORBA and Java. It's a red-covered book. I have it, but I should have written that down. I apologize. You can come to me later, and I'll have it written down. But CORBA and Java shows you, and it has a whole bunch of data on how to write a Java program that will, of course, make requests across a CORBA bus. I'm going to be putting up this week on my website a whole bunch of junk that has a lot of the code that I've written that allows you to look at CORBA buses and request things and et cetera, et cetera. Next question.
You said that this allows you to write programs faster because the objects are written, but doesn't that involve a hell of a lot of trust that what you're getting is worthwhile? And you kind of have to check it anyway. It doesn't seem like you're saving a whole lot.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And the individual said that doesn't it defeat the whole purpose of the speed end of it? Doesn't it defeat the whole purpose of writing objects? Because if you have to worry about all these lower level implementation things, then you're going to spend all that time checking all of these objects, etc. And you're spending all that time on the security end and it doesn't do anything for you. Well, I think there are two answers to that. I mean, unfortunately, that's the direction. I shouldn't say unfortunately, because I really like distributed objects. I think they're a great idea. But as far as it goes, bounds checking is a really important thing. So as long as programs start doing more bounds checking, there isn't going to be any issues with that. Things, of course, will always pop up, but in reality, that's why we're all here. You know, we're security people, and hopefully people will find bad objects and they'll get weeded out pretty quickly. So it'll just be more a part of the development process. But in reality, it'll make it easier for writing software. Just as all processors, like the 486, 586, et cetera, have little bugs and problems in them. There are ways of working around those bugs and those problems. And that's essentially what Qorvo allows you to do, is just plug in modules that anybody can look at and do things with. Next question. You. Better exception handling. I mean, that's the nature of coding, though, and you're going to have people who write bad code, so, you know, and that's going to be the security issue with objects, I think, forever, and that's something that, unfortunately, the object management group did not think to address at this point. Next question. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of the advantages of Qorvo, and that's a good point that you bring up, one of the advantages of Qorvo is you can take an existing program, write something called a wrapper, which is just an interface to an existing program, and then, like, for example, a database, and then you already have those interfaces there for the object bus, and then you just make the request to the wrapper. The wrapper then goes, gets the data from the legacy program. The legacy program then kicks back the data, then kicks it back across the bus, and you have it. So, you, sir? That's a really good point, actually, and I meant to bring that up. There are ways of installing an object or putting an object on onto a Qorvo bus. An object, when you go ahead and you write it, you'll go ahead and you will execute it to advertise it to the Qorvo bus initially. So the Qorvo bus will put it into its repository. So essentially all you do is you have two options. You have the ability to install it on the one system, or you have an ability to advertise it. Now an object when it puts itself on, the only thing that can do anything to that object should be the object itself, or there are bus or the broker itself has the ability to override any object if it so wishes, but the object itself and none of its inherited guests or any of its other things have the ability to delete it. But it has, the object itself has the ability to delete itself, install itself, and modify itself. So, and that gives actually a lot of power to somebody who wants to do something to an object, because if, in terms of spoofing, since there isn't a whole lot in place for saying where the object is. There are things in place to say where the object is from and why it's modifying itself, but it would not be so hard at this point without certificate and authentication and object to for an object just to be spoofed. So somebody can go ahead and insert a rogue object into the system and, you know, start getting the data that they needed or wanted from a business or from wherever. You, sir?
Yeah.
I can't hear. At this point, unfortunately, no, there's no way to restrict the information repository. And the reason why is because it's a distributed system. It has to be advertised. The best thing to do in that situation is obscurity. If you have an object there that you're worried there's going to be issues with people being able to do things with it, name it something weird and either don't put anything in for what its invocation does or make something up. So, and that's really, as far as the way that the information repository works, it has to advertise itself, because if it doesn't do that, then when another org needs to find out if it has a certain object invocation, it can't. It has no way of finding it out if it's obscuring it, and it has to be open in that way by its nature. There are workarounds, I think, and there are things that could probably be put in place with certificates and authentication, etc., but it just hasn't been worked out at this point. And in fact, that's one of the cool things about CORBA at this point. It's still a very new thing, and I'm sure a lot of people who are here, if they're interested, could get in on a lot of the bodies that are doing work on these things, because there's really nothing in place. These are questions I just sat down and asked myself, and I started to do some coding, and I started to find some things. So. I would say the question was, when do I think the object management group is going to have security in place? At this point, never. As far as that kind of security goes, the working group right now for putting the business application and security in and having objects that you can use to do the encryption and the tunneling between orgs and between objects, I think they're maybe 9 months or so away from having things in place that you can just use to do that. I should write it down. It's www.angstrom.net. Angstrom is spelled /Clovis, Clovis. It's a lovely place in California. I hope somebody's broken down there on the way to Fresno or something. Actually, that's not why I picked it. I don't know. We won't even go into my nick, but I've had it way too long to change it, so.
You mentioned earlier the thought that ACSEC versus CORBA, you thought it means they go war, but ACSEC is going to win instead because it's
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up again. I didn't go into it, but we're talking about CORBA versus ActiveX and why ActiveX will probably win. And does it have to be, is it because Microsoft's backing? And this is the reason why I would say ActiveX had a very wonderful lead in this whole thing. Because probably just about everybody here had to deal with ActiveX on some level. Microsoft is very, very intelligent with the way that they do things, with their programming languages and with their programming designing tools, because what they do is they make it easy for idiots to go and make things. So it's easy for an individual to go ahead and make a web browser because there's an ActiveX object that goes ahead and abstracts all of the issues of the HTTP end of things. So all you need is the object and then the ActiveX control that handles it and a bunch of other visual things that you can pop in, and then you have your own little browser using Microsoft C++ compiler. Here's another example of something that Microsoft has done, and it follows those lines, and this is why I think ActiveX has a fantastic lead, and it'll probably end up winning the race of distributed objects. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the Microsoft J++ compiler, but the J++ compiler, what it allows you to do is you can go ahead and you can write code, and you can inline Java code in a C program, or you can write a Java program and inline C code, or you can write a Java program and then go ahead and statically link it to Microsoft libraries. And by doing all those things, you're taking away from Java its ability to be executed on any platform, because you've gone ahead and you've linked it to these things that make it platform dependent, which from an open perspective, that's a bad thing, that you're now you can't go ahead and execute code on any platform. But from Microsoft's perspective, what they've done is they've given individuals the ability to write Java code very easily with their programming environment, but they've gone and they've made it platform dependent to their platform, which they happen to like very much, and they like to sell a whole lot of. So I think the big reason why ActiveX DCOM has the great advantage is because they are development tools. And if you go to any bookstore and you take a look, there are so many ActiveX books on the shelf. You know, there's probably, if you go to a Borders, Barnes & Noble, everybody has one of those. If you go in there, there's probably 100 books on ActiveX, maybe 50 books on ActiveX. If you look at what's in place for the CORBA, the different CORBA books, there'll maybe be 8. So, as far as it goes, Microsoft puts in development tools that allow people that don't know how to code, which, as we've learned by the nature of distributed objects, is bad, that people who don't know how to code are writing code from a secure point of view, but they allow people who just need to get stuff done to get it done. So that's where Microsoft, because right now it's going to be a war of developers, since they can easily get people to develop on their platform, they'll probably end up winning the war. So. What makes the information repository different from ActiveX's what is it, the query? Yeah, the query interface. The major difference between the ActiveX query interface and the information repository is, with ActiveX, the query interface is static. With an ActiveX control, when you write an interface, that is the interface name, that is the interface that's what's there. The information repository is a very general thing where you can pretty much insert anything into it at any time. And anything can go, you can make up any object type and any object name. Objects, of course, have to have a unique name for it to be found. There are a lot of ways of handling that, but I'm not going to go into that whole technical end. But the main difference between ActiveX and the interface put on ActiveX and the information repository is one is static and one can be completely dynamic. So. I see. That's a good question. There really isn't any standard out-of-the-box CORBA stuff. There are a few companies that, yeah, they do have things. Part of the best thing for you to do is, I'll be putting the stuff up on the site and just grab my stuff and you can start looking for object buttons. But really, at this point, no, there's nothing specific that you're going to find that is exploitable. You know, there's nothing pretty common at this point, except for having an information repository in the first place. So, you have another? Oh, no, that's in place. Pardon me? It allows you to have the whole list because other orgs might need it. But you see what I'm saying? Yeah, that's a good... I can't think of a specific situation off the top of my head why one orb might not need just one specific invocation or why I'd want the whole database, but I'm sure there's situations that come up where it's necessary for it to have the whole database of object implementations. So. But yeah, that's a good point. That might be something that they should be looking into as far as making it more secure. Pardon me? What do you mean, like a free orb? Like a new orb? Is that your question? Is there anything like that? Okay, well, I would say for the security end of stuff, the best thing to check out, sometime next week I'll be putting up the Corba stuff on it at my website, but for now the best place to probably be looking at things is the Object Management Group, omg.org. So that's really good. That's the other thing, there's why I don't think Corba is going to do so well in the end. As far as it goes, there's a decent amount of support for Corba in place right now. Oracle 8 has been released, and Oracle 8 uses Corba for its object backplane. But and that's the number two company in place. So it's going to be supported, and it's not going to die anytime soon. But as far as the war goes, you know, I think ActiveX, even though it's been worked on a whole lot less in a distributed way, it has a head start. So onmg.org is the best place to look for now. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, they are. Okay, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That's a good question. You pretty much answered your own question there, but by answering, as far as it goes, by putting on your orb is like installing any other program. It looks like at this point, Iona software has a free orb that you can go ahead and you can download and you can start using if you want to start playing around with an orb on your own local site without downloading Oracle 8. And start pulling around with Oracle 8, which they have a 30-day trial at their site if you want to use it. Installing an orb is just like installing any other program. And with any orb, like the Iona orb that you brought up, it has a whole bunch of development tools and things with it. So if you want to start playing with an orb immediately, come and see me later. I'll find out the address for Iona software. But what was the name of the magazine? The Java?
Java Report.
Yeah, Java Report has, with it this month, comes with a free orb. So the Iona orb for you to use and play with. So I recommend trying it out. I know I will. So. Any other questions? Yeah, we got a hit, man. Thanks, everybody, and be sure to see Hacker Jeopardy tonight. We didn't catch it last night. And then, is DT around? Will somebody give me the hook? I don't know who's on next. Does anybody know who's on next? I'm sure they're not out of bed yet, but...